The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday Space Show at a special time, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And we're anxious to be here. We have a great first-time guest on the Space Show, live from Cape Canaveral. We have lots to talk about with Lauren, who I will introduce in just a minute. But first, a little bit of Space Show business. Number one, we're using the 60-minute format tonight. So, again, watch your timing and your clock, and if you want to call our guest or email us, make sure you do it while the show is still going on, because we're doing the 60-minute program. And then the website newsletter is already up, and the upcoming shows are already up on the website, so we have a very full week of Space Show programming, including a special pre-recorded program on Wednesday with Alan Boyle. And Bachelor wanted to talk about the potential sale of Stratolaunch, and Alan's been covering that very, very well on his GeekWire, and he has agreed to come on and update us and tell you how you can buy it if you're the one who wants to buy it. So that's pre-recorded, and of course, we don't really know exactly when John Bachelor will make that available, but as soon as he does, it will also be on the Space Show site. So that's just a heads up about what's coming from Hotel Mars this week. As for today, we thank you for tuning in at this special time. The toll-free number is 1-866-687-7223. Remember, that is our preferred way of talking with our guests tonight, so please use it. Again, 1-866-687-7223. You can send email through drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com, and you can also post comments on our blog, which is thespaceshow.com, all the way over to the far right for upcoming show menu. This is the first program listed. Open that page up, and blog comments are down at the bottom. As soon as you post your comment or ask your question, I'll get a copy of it and can bring it up and integrate it into the show with our guest tonight. But again, one more time, toll-free is our preferred way, 1-866-687-7223. Our full website newsletter is already posted on our website for the coming week, so make sure you check it out for all of the programs listed. And scroll down, and you'll see all of the programs we have planned for the future. And we have quite a bit planned because we're well into the second quarter and the third quarter of the year. So we're almost through with the second quarter. If you have any guest suggestions, we're eager to have them. Email them to me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. If you want to subscribe to our email newsletter, which is very short and concise, it goes out at 6 a.m. Monday morning, California time, please send me your email address. And remember, everything we do is archived. You can listen right off of our website or quickly download the programs. If you want to acquire Space Show logo wear, the best way to find our store is to click on any of the website pages where Pepper is listening to the Space Show, and Pepper will guide you to our Cafe Press store. And then the most important, of course, is supporting the Space Show. We are a 501c3 nonprofit with onegiantleapfoundation.org, and we're listener-supported 100%, which means we depend on you to keep the Space Show going and to have great guests like we have tonight. As a nonprofit, if you're paying U.S. federal taxes, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. And if you're a California taxpayer, you also get a deduction. We're a public benefit corporation in California. If you have any questions, email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com, or you can go to onegiantleapfoundation.org and check that out. One other piece of news, our website hosting company is called In Motion Hosting, and they have notified us that they need to do massive updates to the server software on our website, which may take down parts of our website. So I think this is going to happen this week. I'm not 100% sure. Spencer is standing by to repair things on the website if they don't work after they play around with updating their server software. We don't have a choice in this, but hopefully it's seamless. But if the Space Show site is down and you detect problems, email me. My email does not go through the Space Show website. It's a Microsoft 365 account, so the Dr. Space email will reach me separately of what's going on with the email, and your input to tell us that there may be a website glitch that we don't notice would be really important. I hope this is seamless. I hope InMotion does a really good job, but I'm just giving everybody a heads up that that may happen this week, and there may be a side effect from it all. One more thing about supporting the Space Show, we do have sponsorships, and the sponsors get their banner ads running across our homepage. You can change that ad as often as you want. On the longer shows, I read the full sponsor message, but on shorter programs such as tonight, I just want to thank our sponsors, because without their great support, we would not be doing the Space Show. And our sponsors are very, very important to us. So we do have, as a sponsor, the Integrated Space Program, the Space Foundation, the National Space Society, Celestis, AIAA, the Space Development Network. Who am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting somebody. This is what happens when you get a little bit older. Northrop Grumman and the Space Foundation. So, again, without all of them, we wouldn't be doing the program, and we thank them very much for their support. If any of you are interested in being a sponsor, email me at David Livingston, email address, drspace@thespaceshow.com. So, as I said a few minutes ago, we're honored to welcome to the Space Show for the first time, direct and live from the Cape, Lauren Grush, and she's a science reporter for The Verge, the technology and culture brand for Vox Media, where she specializes in all things space, from distant stars and planets to human spaceflight and the commercial space race. She is the daughter of two NASA engineers. She grew up surrounded by space shuttles and rocket scientists, literally. She is also the host of Spacecraft, an original online video series that examines what it takes to send people to space. Before joining The Verge, she published stories in Popular Science, The New York Times, Nautilus Magazine, Digital Trends, Fox News, and ABC News. And the Space Show is really happy and honored to join her list of credits. Lauren, thank you very much for joining the Space Show tonight. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So you're in the Cape for a special Falcon Heavy launch, correct?
Yes. Falcon Heavy is about to launch the SDP-2 mission for the Air Force, and that is tomorrow night at 11:30. And I will be here trying my best to capture some really good images of it.
You've seen the Falcon Heavy launch before, correct?
Yeah, I was here for the first Falcon Heavy launch, which was, I believe, in February of last year.
What do you expect to be different about this, given that it's a night launch?
Well, I mean, I think night launches are just so spectacular. There's just something about them. I mean, any launch is really amazing to behold, but at night it just kind of it becomes sunlight all of a sudden for this brief period of time, and it just really is miraculous to see. And also, one of the reasons I wanted to come down to this launch, because I don't really go to every single launch because I'm based in New York, but I really wanted to try my hand at launch photography, which I've only seen people do from afar, but I wanted to try it myself. And at night, you can get that beautiful long exposure streak shot of the engines as the rocket arcs into the sky. So I'm going to be trying to get that image tomorrow, and I'm feeling a little nervous about it, but I'm hopeful I can get something good.
What do you do? I haven't thought about launch photography, so I'm assuming you're using a camera on a tripod, correct?
Yeah, I'll actually have two cameras on tripods. One will be near the rocket for they let us do this remote camera setup. And I have some kind of special equipment that will trigger when the sound of the rocket goes, and then it'll snap some pictures, and then I'll be at the press site much farther away, much at a safer distance, and that's where I'll try and get the streak shot.
Do you record audio, too?
No, this will just be photography.
And can I ask you a little bit about the equipment? What kind of cameras are they?
I have two Canons, a 60 and a 5D. I think I'll have my 60 out near the site for the remote camera setup, and then my 5D will be the one trying to capture the long exposure shot.
Where can we see your published photos? Where will you put them?
Since it's late, I'll probably get them. I'll get the streak shots I'll have that night if they go well. And I'll probably post them on social media, so either my Instagram or on Twitter. And then in the morning, I'll go and recover the camera that was remote. And I'm hopefully going to send over those images to our creative director back in New York, who's much better at editing photos than I am. He'll take a stab at them, and then I'll hopefully have a story up either this week or next about my experience and what it took. So, but first images should be on social media.
And maybe late tomorrow night, but for sure the next day.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll look forward to seeing them. So you assume that the camera is going to be there overnight, and when you go to get it, it's still there.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so nerve-wracking about it. And I was consulting with people who do this all the time today. And they were saying, you know, just leaving the camera is such a scary experience because it is such expensive equipment, and you're basically just kind of trusting that you've set it up properly and that the rocket's not going to do anything to it. I mean, it should be far enough away. It'll be fine. But, yeah, it is a little nerve-wracking to think that I'll be apart from this camera for, I think like a full 24 hours.
Do you attend any SpaceX, Elon Musk press conferences or anything either before or after the launch?
I think with this particular launch, there won't be a dedicated press conference just because there are so many customers on this mission. It's launching 24 satellites for a rideshare. So to have all of those representatives for a press conference is a bit of a mess. But normally when we do launches like this, yeah, there's usually some kind of press conference before or afterward. Maybe there will be something after the launch, but this is a weird launch, too, because it's 6 hours from takeoff to the final satellite deployment. So not usually the final satellite deployment is when they declare launch success, and I don't think we're going to be waiting 6 hours, you know, starting after 11:30 p.m. So not sure if they're going to do a press conference, and I think we get kicked out.
So here's a heads up for you. I mentioned just briefly that Celestis, the space burial company, is one of our sponsors. So they have a memorial flight, a memorial canister of ashes, people's ashes, not fireplace ashes, going up on the rocket. And fortunately for me, I don't have any family members or dogs on this launch. I've launched, I think, 4 times with them, and I'm waiting to go to the moon with them. But nobody's left me, so I don't have anything on this launch other than they're a great, fabulous sponsor, and I love the company. They're one of the best companies I've ever dealt business with in my entire life. But they're on the OTP satellite, which is part of the Air Force STP-2 mission. So I don't know if Celestis, if you'll see anything in the media group about Celestis or if they have a booth or, you know, there's anything. But if you happen to see something with them and Charlie Schaefer or any of the people are there, you might say hello for the space show and for them. I love those guys, and they're a great sponsor, and you're going to be there, and I'm not, and I'm envious as hell. So,
I'll definitely say something. I believe how it's going to work is once we've set up all of our cameras, we're going to have an opportunity to mingle with all of the different you know, customers and representatives from NASA and the Air Force and all that. So I'm assuming they'll be there, and if they are, I'll definitely let them know that you said hello.
Yeah, now they may be in the visitors area because the families that have loved ones going up on the mission get in, those that actually want to attend the launch or can attend it, go to the public visitor site, which also has a really good view. So that may be where Celestis is hanging out rather than with all the media pros. But in case you run into them, Charlie Schaefer and some of the other people, they're wonderful people, and you'd probably enjoy knowing them, even though you're probably not going to use them anytime soon. But
hopefully not.
But, you know.
But, man, that must be an emotional experience for those at the press, or not the press side, but at the visitor center.
I saw the shuttle from the visitor center, and the only Celestis launch I went to, I took my son and his girlfriend to New Mexico, and we saw a suborbital launch with my mom and my dog on it. That was incredibly emotional, and we took that three-hour bus ride through no man's land at the time to get out to the launch site from this little town north of Las Cruces. Uh-huh. And that was interesting. But what was interesting is most of the people that were attending for Celestis were not space people. But for some reason, their loved one had a thing for space or astronomy or whatever, and they wanted to honor their loved one with this kind of a launch. And there was even a motorcycle group among them on the bus ride. And watching their reaction to the launch and then listening to what they all had to say on the bus ride going back was probably as good, if not better, than the launch. I mean, it really was moving, and this was just suborbital on the little tiny up aerospace rocket. Celestis does a great job, and people from all over the world love it, but I don't want to be a walking billboard for them on your time. But
I'm intrigued, because now I think I might reach out to some of these folks once they've seen the launch and kind of get their perspective on what it was like.
So I
think that would be an interesting story.
I wore a name tag. Well, I had a media name tag for the space show, so I don't think that's... I think my son and his girlfriend had a Celestis name tag, so they were identified, because there were about 1,000 people at the New Mexico site for that up aerospace launch back then, way back when. Thank God it didn't blow up or anything. They may be identified. I don't know, and I don't know how many people actually travel there to be part of it, but it is a great experience, and they do launch your dog or your pet, which is pretty phenomenal. When I did it, I had to keep quiet about my dog going on it because they didn't want to offend people whose loved ones were on it thinking that pets were also on the same rocket. But now I don't think they have that demarcation, and I think they even have a separate pet memorial. So I did. My dog helped me write my doctoral dissertation, so I was all for launching Biscuit.
What was your dog's name?
It was a husky, and his name was Biscuit. She used to come up when I would be working at 2 or 3 in the morning and sleep by the side of me in the computer room. So I consider she was an inspiration, and she deserved to go to space along with my mom, who put up with all my craziness in graduate school at a late time in life. So it was a great experience. And then they did orbital with SpaceX, and they did another one with SpaceX out of Kwajalein, and ended up deep in the Pacific Ocean someplace. So we're supposed to have 2 dogs and my mom going to the moon on their next lunar shot, whenever that may be. But you probably have fun talking to them, and it might be really interesting for you to get, because they're not space cadet people.
Yeah, no, I'd love to know their motivation for people that aren't interested in space, why they chose this route versus all the other routes you can take.
So this is an interesting transition, because Celestis is an actually money-making commercial space business. It's been around for a long, long time, way more than most of the companies we hear and talk about, like SpaceX and Blue Origin and all that. And they are a commercial space company. And I know that you follow the commercial space industry. How do you think that's developing and going? And do you think the commercial people will get to the moon, and will they play a role in helping the U.S. to get back to the moon, or is it going to be government only going to the moon?
Yeah, I think this is definitely a topic that I've kind of been dwelling on, especially as we come up on the Apollo 11 anniversary, because I've been trying to think, you know, how are we going to get back to the moon if we're going to get back to the moon? And I think a lot of people like to say, oh, you know, NASA's the one that has to do it, or, you know, the commercial space industry, they're the ones that are going to do it. I really do think it's going to be some kind of hybridization between the two, you know, with maybe NASA playing a different role than it is now, but also capitalizing on what the commercial industry has developed. But I think we have to also understand that the commercial industry isn't quite there yet. You know, they definitely make great strides, especially when it comes to launch, but, you know, it's, I don't think anyone's developed, you know, a lander like that we need. You know, we're nowhere near close to what we need to get on the moon just yet. And I don't know. I think it'll be some kind of marriage of the two. But I wouldn't put all of my eggs in the commercial space industry basket just yet, if that makes sense.
It does. And you have sort of a question related to that. It's maybe a little different, probably a lot different. It's from Chuck in Chicago by email. And so I'm going to go ahead and insert it now, although it's a little bit of a variation. And Chuck says, it's nice to have you on the show, Lauren. David, when he posted your bio on the bio website for the space show, also has your photo. So I assume you're fairly young, and I'm going to make a guess and assume you might even be a millennial. Assuming I'm right, that's my third assumption here, we always read and hear that millennials are not that interested in space as a group as a whole. I'm wondering how you relate space to your friends if they're not space people or engineers. Are they interested in returning to the moon? Do they have an interest in space? Is it an uphill battle for you with them? Can you shed some light on millennials and younger people going to the moon and our space program?
For sure. I think about this all the time, because one of the things I really try to pride myself on when it comes to my reporting is to communicate in a way that is not specifically just for space people. You know, I think sometimes it's easy when you've been covering this stuff for so long, you can write to other space geeks because you know the topic so well. But however long I do this, I still want to maintain, you know, some kind of friendliness when it comes to how I write. So I'm constantly checking in with my friends and my peers outside of the space industry to see how they feel. And it is kind of, you know, I think people my age are optimistic about space. They love the idea of space. But in terms of being invested in it and thinking that it should be a priority for what, you know, science and technology, I don't know if that necessarily is how they view it. But, you know, people are always so excited when I tell them that I report on space, and if they have if they want to hear about the latest story that I've done, they're very gripped by it. I hate to say it, but there are some people who think that, you know, NASA was canceled, you know, a decade ago, or that, somebody told me the other day that their friend thought that the International Space Station was on the moon. You know, there is quite a disconnect in terms of what people know about our space program, but they're very enthusiastic about it. So I take that as, you know, a good sign. But it is important to remember that not everybody is very aware of what we're doing in space or why we're doing it.
ISS on the moon? I haven't heard that one before. How do you answer that? How do you even answer that to somebody?
Me that. I can't remember. Somebody said it to me, and I was like, okay, well, you know, at least they
At least they know it's in space and off Earth.
Yeah, at least they know it exists.
Have you found a way, or have you tried to convert someone who doesn't think it should be a priority and maybe is excited about it, but not to the extent that they care if we go back to the moon or think we should? Is it easy to try to convert someone, or you don't try?
I wouldn't say I try to convert, but I just try to explain that space is a part of their lives, whether they know it or not. You know, in terms of the satellites, the GPS satellites that we use, or, you know, the fact that the, you know, I think a good example is Space Force, right? Everybody was so intrigued by this idea that the military would be doing anything in space, and that, you know, I just kind of try to take the time to explain to them that, you know, I hate to break to you, but we've been in space for a very long, or the military has been doing space for a very long time, and this is honestly not as exciting as it seems, but more of just a bureaucratic reshuffling of procurements and, you know, who will be operating space technology. So I wouldn't say I try to convert people. It's more of just being like, well, we are a space nation, you know, and trying to explain that to people, and just in a way that, you know, is friendly and not, you know, condescending, which can, I think, be easy when you've been, you know, talking about space for so long and you encounter people that don't quite know what's going on.
You have another question. Bob is in Phoenix, and Bob says, since you're supportive of commercial space, do you have any worries? Do you seem concerned about entrusting commercial astronaut space flight to the private companies rather than a NASA type of vehicle? Do you think that that is a little bit too risky and may hurt commercial space if something were to go wrong?
I think yes. I think definitely whenever, look, there's always risk in any kind of endeavor like this, but if somebody dies in a commercial mission, I think that is just going to be amplified to the extreme, more so than maybe if they were a NASA astronaut, though that would also be pretty detrimental as well. And obviously we should try and maintain, you know, we should try to make sure that everybody is as safe as possible. But I don't know if, I don't know what the right answer is, though. You know, some people might say more regulations are necessary. I'm not sure we're quite there yet. I think the commercial crew program is a good way into this because they do have NASA kind of breathing down their necks in terms of safety. I think it's in everybody's best. I think it's in the commercial space industry's best interest to be as safe as possible, because if one company hurts another or hurts a person, you know, that's going to open, you know, that'll be a lot of questions for everybody. So, I guess what was the question? Am I worried about it? I'm worried about the optics of it for sure. And I'm of course worried about, you know, the humans involved.
Do you think they would be any less safe than a NASA vehicle? Do you think the standards might be different? They may be the same on paper, but different in reality?
That is a great question. And I think it's so multi-layered, it's hard to answer because it depends on their testing and their, you know, what kind of codes that they want to live up to. I guess but then again, you know, you also have NASA, who is supposed to be the pinnacle of safety, and the agency also lost 2 space shuttles. So, you know, it's hard to say one method is better than the other, because in spaceflight, everything is risky. And so there is going to be a bad day, I think, the more that you do it. But at the same time, you know, you got to keep going to maintain that safety record. So, I don't know.
Would you, if you had a chance, fly to space on one of the commercial spaceships?
I talk about this all the time. I don't think I'd be on the first one. I think I'd be on the 10th one, you know, 10th and beyond.
Would you want to go to the moon and return? Would you be interested in going on a longer mission to Mars?
I would go to the moon. I would not go to Mars. I'm very content with our planetary system.
Well, it's in our planetary system.
The Earth moon system.
So you're into
I'm okay with our little spot of the solar system. Mars is just too far away for me. Too isolated.
In terms of space settlement, which is another big commercial interest for a lot of people, do you see a lot of people having an interest outside the space community in space settlement? Do they even know about that, or is it something that's even talked about?
I think people are fascinated by the idea, kind of going back to what I said earlier, but I don't think anyone thinks it's a priority, and I don't think anyone thinks of it as a realistic, you know, the argument that we need to settle Mars for Plan B. I don't think anybody really takes that argument seriously outside of the space community.
But to be fair, they probably don't think that we need a Plan B anyway, right?
I think a lot of people are more focused on, you know, fixing this planet and climate change, and that's kind of more of their focus right now. And, you know, when it comes to the news, there's a lot of other things beyond space that have captured people's attention. So I think, like I said, you know, I'm sure they'd love to hear about ways we could settle Mars, but I doubt they find it a priority right now.
You have another email question, and Linda is in Portland, Oregon. And Linda says, I'm an undergraduate in the university here. I'm studying engineering, and I'm wondering, first of all, if you have any specific recommendations about what to study in grad school to be able to be part of the space community. And do you think there are any blockages because of I'm being a woman, or is that all over with now?
Well, I'm flattered that you are asking me this question, because I do not have an engineering degree, and I'm actually a lowly journalism major. But I think when it comes to the space industry that I've seen, it does not seem you don't need to follow a certain path in order to get to where you need to be. So I think my advice would be to focus on to figure out what it is that you want to do within this industry, and then, you know, try and make choices toward that goal. I know that's really vague, but I mean, think of it this way, you know, Blue Origin's hiring people to, you know, come up with the astronaut experience on their New Shepard vehicle. And then you also have people that are, you know, for lack of a better term, interior designers for spacecraft. You know, there's all sorts of ways into this industry that don't just entail engineering or, you know, aerospace engineering. So I don't think you should feel limited in your choices. I think it just depends on what it is you want to do. And then in terms of being a woman, I would say the barriers are definitely much lower, at least from what I've seen. And there's all these really great organizations that are popping up, like the Brooke Owens Fellowship. Sounds like something really great for this, I think, what is it, Linda? And, yeah, there's all these opportunities of really helping women get into the space industry that I think are fantastic. Still a long way to go, though. I don't want to say that it's all great right now. Not to knock my experience here, but, you know, whenever I come to launches like this, I'm always kind of the odd woman out, I feel like. There's a lot of men, very few women, and it just, you know, I think the problem there is the urge I feel whenever that happens to me is to run out of the room and, you know, find a place where I feel more comfortable. But you just kind of have to fight against that, and I think that is a good way to show other women that, you know, it's a great place for them to come and thrive as well.
I've interviewed quite a few women journalists for space, But more to the point, I've interviewed more physicists and engineers of all sorts, plus policy and national security consultants who are women, not just from in the United States, but from around the world. And when I started in 2001 with the space show, it was hard to find women in these fields and to be a guest. And now, often they're more numerous than men are. But in journalism, I've only interviewed probably a handful of women journalists, maybe two handful, whereas men keep coming like ants. So they're truly abundant, but it's a very different world today than it was 20 years ago.
I agree, and I've definitely found a very great group of supportive women within space journalism, and I'm very, you know, proud to call them friends and colleagues. But you're right, you know, we kind of stick together because there are so few of us. But I do see it changing, and more, you know, each and every day I see a new woman enter the field, and it's very encouraging. So I think I have it a lot better than maybe people did, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So I consider myself very lucky for sure.
So you had to learn or become familiar with some aerospace engineering just because of what you report on, like a Falcon Heavy launch does have technical and engineering components to that launch that you probably report on, and other things as well. So do you learn it just by doing? Did you take classes? Is it all on-the-job training?
It was learning by doing, and also, I mean, like you mentioned, my parents do have you know, extensive experience at NASA, so I kind of gleaned some things from them. Not a lot. I kind of entered space and journalism and thinking I knew everything I needed to know, and that was clearly not the case from day one. But yeah, it was a lot of just reporting on this stuff over and over again, finding smart people to talk to explain it to me in a way that I would understand. But also, yes, I can safely say that I probably know more about rockets than the average human, less so than the average rocket scientist. But I kind of like it that way because my job, I consider it as a translator for people. So I don't ever want to get into the jargon and the, you know, esoteric wording that kind of alienates people when it comes to reading about space. So I kind of like not being the expert in this field, so that way I can still ask questions, still double check everything, and also explain it in a way that I think people will understand who aren't engineers.
Another, I think, good question comes from another listener, Rob, who is in Tucson, Arizona. And Rob says, do you plan to stay in a space and technical journalistic field all the way through your career, or do you see something else for you down the road in the space-related area?
That is a very good question, and one I ask myself every single day.
Really?
I love space, but I think the reason I'm here is it kind of marries two things I'm really passionate about. I love science and technology, but at the same time, I really love being creative and storytelling. And it was hard for me in college and in school to really kind of identify which route to take because I do feel so split down those two kind of extremes. And that's why I really think space journalism is such a good place for me, is because I am allowed to be creative, but also, you know, get to talk about these really technical, logical things. I think that I want to continue being creative for sure. And like I was saying earlier, I think in the space world, there are a lot of ways to do that that aren't just journalism. But for now, I'm having a really good time doing what I'm doing. I'll have to get back to you in a couple of years because I'm not sure.
Well, as long as you like what you're doing, from everything I've learned, that's key more than what it is specifically that you're doing. So
yeah, I won't won't lie, though. I mean, it does get stressful, especially, I mean, my fiance was joking with me the other day about, you know, there's just so much space news sometimes, and it's, you know, it's such a niche topic for people, and yet, you know, I am truly very busy, and that can get very, you know, I can get a lot of anxiety from that, but I think that's just the times we're living in. There is a lot, you know, there's so many companies right now doing all these amazing things, and then you've got NASA trying to go back to the moon, and there really is no shortage of things to write about.
Is your fiancé a space cadet in a positive sense as well?
No, he is definitely not, and I like it that way.
But he tolerates your being one,
yes,
obviously.
But he's also a great sounding board, too, when it comes to, you know, is this something that you would know about or care about, you know, and so sometimes you need that barometer.
You have a phone call. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you? Where are you? And thank you for calling Sunday evening.
Yes, David. Hi, it's Bill Gallen calling.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good. Doing well. And I just wanted to say to Lauren, I've really enjoyed a lot of your articles over the last couple of years. I wanted to make sure that you were hearing that because I think you're a really good correspondent and writer.
Oh, thank you very much. It really means a lot to me to hear that.
Sure. And one of the payloads that's going to be launching tomorrow night on the launch you're attending is going to be the Planetary Society's light sail. That is, that's a payload that's of maybe particular interest to some of us. So I wondered if you have any, particular angle of addressing that topic.
Well, I've actually been following the light sail for a while. The first launch that I went to that for work was the launch of Light Sail 1, which, oh my gosh, I think that was back in 2015, maybe. I think this is such a neat technology. I am curious to know exactly how it would be used in missions in the future, just because I think it wouldn't be suitable for every type of mission. But I am very excited to see this, to see it raise its orbit with this sail. Also, I interviewed Bill Nye a couple days ago about it, and he was saying that once it's deployed, it's going to be visible from Earth. So I'm going to try and check that out, maybe hopefully if New York's light pollution isn't too bad. I can see it from the Earth below.
Good. One thing I haven't heard is how long they're expecting it to stay in orbit. I haven't heard anything about that. Did you hear anything on that topic?
Yeah, I believe, and I'm actually checking my notes right now, I want to say it was about a year. I'm looking. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly, but I want to say it was about a year, and I think as they raise their orbit, they become more elliptical, and that's probably what drags it down eventually.
Ah, okay. Wondered about that. Very good. All right. Well, that was what I wanted to ask about, and I will say I'll probably read your report on it on Tuesday because I don't think I'll stay up long enough to.
Well, it's,
you know what? I do not blame you.
It's 8:30 here if it goes off on time, so I should be able to see it, and I'll see it on the internet. I don't think it's on any TV station here. They probably don't cover it on any station, I would imagine.
I'm planning to catch the launch, but I probably won't be up when the satellites go out. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the last time they aired one on TV was the first Falcon Heavy launch, which I was surprised about that, but yeah.
Did you watch the Tesla get launched?
I did. It was there, front and center.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was funny. I know that a lot of people were kind of upset about it, and I understand their reasonings behind it. But at the same time, I believe, didn't SpaceX say that they had offered, you know, to NASA or someone else, you know, a government agency to fly something, and they turned it down. So, you know, why not have a little fun with it? And it definitely captured the attention of everyone. That was a that was an event that, you know, my friends knew about and I didn't have to say anything. You know, everybody, non-space people alike, all got in on that. And so I think whenever you can do something that captures people's attention like that, I don't necessarily think of it as a bad thing.
Did your friends think it was a bad thing, or were they upset about it, or did they think it was really a cool event?
I think most of them thought it was cool and neat, and I mean, those pictures were incredible.
I thought it was a great piece of publicity for SpaceX. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a smart publicity move, and as long as they followed, you know, protocol. I think I did a story on, you know, I was curious whether you can just launch something like that into space, especially because he was claiming it was going near Mars. But, I mean, as long as it followed planetary protection protocol and, you know, the government said it was okay, I mean, it's not like it was staying in orbit around Earth. So, you know, it wasn't clogging up the environment there.
Bill, are you...
I get the optics. You know, people think that it was kind of frivolous and, you know, that these things should strictly be about science. And I understand their arguments.
Bill, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Do you have anything else, or I'll clear the line for someone else?
No, that's, yeah, I'll be glad to free up the line, and good luck to
thank you for your call.
Tomorrow evening, and to you.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, listeners, our line is clear. If you would like to call, we still have time, 1-866-687-7223, and email remains drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. I have another one for you. Larry is in Atlanta, and he says, I'm curious if you went to any of the big conferences in Australia or Mexico where Mr. Musk made all of his big rocket announcements, and those were big events, and what your thoughts were if you went to those and covered those events in person.
Oh, I did. I went to his very first talk in Guadalajara, and, you know, whenever us space reporters get together at various conferences, we always kind of talk about that day and how surreal it was, because Elon has kind of transcended space CEO, and he's a bit of a rock star now, and the event was very much like attending a rock concert with, you know, the biggest pop star on the planet. People, well, first they let in the press, and it was a huge auditorium where he was giving the talk, and we kind of ran in there to get a good spot, and then they let in the general audience, and it really did feel like a stampede. You know, you could hear like a roar, the rumbling of feet, you know, running into the room. And then I don't know if you guys watched that video feed, but I mean, the people asking those questions were just so in awe of him. And yeah, it was very, it was kind of, I almost had like a bit of a PTSD from that, because it was just so chaotic. And I think that's just kind of the crowd that Elon generates these days.
I'm assuming your friends all know who Musk is, right?
Yeah, you know, I actually did a poll a couple years ago to see if people knew who he was. Most people knew who Elon Musk was, but there were some that still don't know who he is.
What about Bezos? Have you done a poll to see if people know who he is?
Yeah, people definitely know him just because of Amazon is so ubiquitous. I would say SpaceX and Tesla are almost there, but, you know, everybody uses Amazon, and he's the richest guy in the world right now.
Were you in Australia for the subsequent presentation?
No, I really would have loved to go to Australia, but that's a bit too far for me to go for work. So instead, I woke up at, 2 in the morning, I think that presentation happened, and followed it from my computer.
So the ability for him to build the big starship and go to Mars, your thoughts on that? So I'm not now talking about a NASA program. I'm talking about what SpaceX says that they want to do. You're thinking that they can actually make that happen and fly that big, gigantic rocket?
I think they have the technical prowess to do it. I still have some questions in terms of how they're going to be able to fund it. But I have no doubt that they could make it happen. I also don't, whenever SpaceX gives timetables, I never believe them. So what I think they're saying, first trip to Mars 2024 or something crazy like that, you know, I take all of that with the biggest grain of salt. But yeah, I think they can probably make the vehicle. It's just, it's going to be a very expensive vehicle, and I'm wondering if they have enough. From my understanding, the company does not seem to be extremely profitable. So I don't think they have enough in reserves. They definitely have to raise a lot of money and then also find other avenues of generating revenue apart from just their rocket business alone. So I think that's where I'm wondering if it's possible. It's all money.
Do you follow the financial side of things like this?
I do, but not as closely as, say, a business reporter would over at CNBC or Bloomberg. So I will admit that that is an area of mine that I don't follow as strictly, but I do keep in touch, you know, I keep tabs on where, you know, when they're raising money, you know, when they've closed the latest round. I think recently they had changed how much they had raised, and it was more than they had originally said, and so that was a big deal, and it changed their valuation. So, I mean, it sounds like they have no problem raising money. Whether that's going to be enough to fund the development of the rocket, I'm curious to find out.
You have another email coming in, and this is from Mary in Billings, Montana. I don't get too many from Billings. And she says, I like your 6 p.m. Sunday slot. Maybe you should think about doing more of them at this time, David. Maybe some other people will comment about that on the blog, but for me, it works really nice. I'm wondering what you think, as well as your peers, because China is always in the news, often with a lot of bad, scary stuff, and also a lot about space and what they're doing in space and related space, especially since they landed on the far side of the moon. Do you follow China? Do you think we're in a moon race or some type of a space race with China? Are you concerned about China maybe getting to the moon before we do? Do you think this is a big issue for the United States to be concerned about?
I hold the view that we should not be concerned about it. I don't think that we need to be in a race with other countries because we've already won that race, and so just because we're not on the moon right now doesn't mean that if we wanted to, we could go back to the moon. It just depends on how we want to do it, right? That's what constantly bogs us down is the politics and the strategy. But we can go to the moon. We are capable of doing that. So I don't think if China were to land people on the moon, yeah, I know a lot of people would be really upset about it, but I don't think that is necessarily the kind of viewpoint that we need to have. However, if that's what it takes to really get us to, you know, light the fire under our butts and to, you know, do a sustainable way of getting back to the moon, sure, let's use that as motivation. But I wouldn't say I'm concerned about China. I think we should be open to everybody, you know, emerging in the field of space exploration.
I have an email question. It's really kind of off the subject, but I'll ask it since the listener brought me up in the question. Todd is our listener in San Diego, and Todd said, Lauren, when David introduced you, he talked about reporting on technology in general, and one of his favorite topics that doesn't seem to get all that much attention with space show listeners, I don't understand why, is the commercial development of potentially new supersonic transport planes without a supersonic boom. Do you follow what's going on in that market with the companies and the technologies? Is this something that interests you? Do you report on it at all?
I hate to say it, David, but it is not. I'm sorry, But, you know, you should have on your show to talk about that as one of our transportation reporters, who I'm sure is definitely much more involved in that than I am.
Do you have one in mind?
Well, we have two. It's either Sean O'Kane or Andy Hawkins. I think Andy covers more planes, but I don't quote. Maybe Sean would be good, because Sean also is into space, so
you can
ask them if you like.
Well, can you introduce me via email? Because I've asked both companies to come on air. Boom is one of them, and I forget the name of the other one. So Boom at least gave me the courtesy of a reply, but said they're not doing unrestricted media. So thank you, but no thank you. And the other guys didn't even bother to reply. So they'll do limited press interviews in writing.
Mm-hmm.
But to come on a, you know, free-for-all radio show like this, they don't want to have anything to do with it. But they didn't even respond to my invitation. There are two companies that are pushing to do this and bring them into the commercial market and change the laws in order to fly supersonic across the United States.
Right. Yeah.
So I do follow it. I am really interested in it. And if your guys know anything about it, I'd love to put them on the space show. So please introduce me when you get a chance.
For sure. I'll definitely bring it up when I'm online tomorrow.
And if we had them, you might have been able to go to Australia. So you should be interested in this.
Yeah, no, that definitely incentive for me to follow this now so that I can pitch more work trips.
That's right. New York to Australia on one of those things would have probably just been a few hours. So
that sounds like a dream.
Doesn't it? Anything flying is a dream if you can shorten the time and you have less harassment to deal with the airlines. But that's,
yeah, exactly.
That's another story. Listeners, there still is a little time if you want to get another email in, drspace@thespaceshow.com. And also, if you want to give us a end of the show, last minute, call 1-866-687-7223. Looking at your crystal ball, what's going to be a hot topic for space for the last 6 months of the year?
Definitely commercial crew as we finalize those dates, and I don't know if you saw the most recent planning dates, but if those are correct, then SpaceX and Boeing are neck and neck right now. I believe SpaceX is aiming for mid-November for their crewed flight, their first crewed test flight, and then Boeing is aiming for the end of November for their first crewed test flight. So I think that's going to get very interesting to see, you know, who pulls out ahead. I know NASA loves to say that it's not a race, but let's be honest, we all want to know who's going to be first, right?
No, I don't know who's going to be first.
Well, I don't know either, but I think that's what, you know, everyone loves to talk about space in terms of a race, right? And competition, I think that's why NASA picked two providers to begin with, is because competition does, spur companies to try to work faster and have that title of being first. So I think people are going to be watching that with a lot of interest.
So who do you think is going to be first?
Oh, gosh. If you had asked me, a couple months ago, I would have said SpaceX, because they had already performed their uncrewed test flight, but then they suffered that anomaly at the Cape, and things are so uncertain, and their investigation into that is still ongoing. So, you know, there's still a lot of unknowns around what happened, and I think once that investigation is over, maybe I'll have a better prediction in my crystal ball. But for now, I really don't know.
So you're playing it safe and not picking.
Yeah, am I allowed to do that?
Well, yeah, there's no punishment on the space show. So.
Okay,
no adverse consequence.
But I would have said SpaceX, but now I think it really is neck and neck.
What's another hot topic for the last half of the year? I can't believe we're already into the second half of the year.
I know. It's crazy. I think it's definitely – well, it depends on how many more launches happen this year, but I think the Internet satellite constellations that are kind of taking over – the world right now, I think that's going to be a growing area of interest, especially as we learn more about the implications and the effects of these things. What I find so fascinating about these constellations is that we're learning as we go, the impact that they have, right? So people are trying to predict, okay, how is this going to affect the space debris problem? And then, you know, what kind of regulations do we need to change in order to maintain, you know, a safe environment in space? And then you had the Starlink satellites launch, and then the astronomers saw them and freaked out, right, because they were so bright. And then they were like, oh, my gosh, there's going to be thousands of these things in the night sky. You know, how is that going to affect our astronomy? So that is such a fascinating topic to me because it's ever evolving. And with each new launch, we learn something new, you know, that we didn't know before. So I'm sure as we put more and more of these things into space, we'll encounter new problems and new concerns that will need to be addressed. And I think that is kind of so fascinating about it.
Is there a dark horse topic that may surpass any of these that could rise up and get everybody's attention?
Dark horse. You know, that's a great question. I don't know of anything right. Nothing's coming to the top of my mind right now. I think something that's really fascinating, and kind of relates to the launch tomorrow, is the Air Force awards that are happening. I think I find that a lot of fun, just because the companies that are involved with it are so, you know, they're kind of in all-out war right now when it comes to getting those launch contracts. And so I'll be interested to watch that unfold. Not sure if that's a dark horse topic, but it's fun for me, who's a space walk and likes, you know, that kind of infighting.
So you do have an 11th hour email that I will ask you.
Oh, all right.
And it is totally, totally off subject of what we've been talking about. And so this is Rod in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Rod says, I've been listening. I hope my question gets to you before you go off air. You haven't asked our guest, David, about discovering life off of Earth. And there is so much talk about Mars being the best possible place. And maybe already people know that there is life on Mars of some sorts, or at least has been on Mars. So, Lauren, your best guess, first of all, do you follow the search for life off of Earth, and what do you think? Does it exist on Mars? Will it be announced anytime soon?
So I definitely follow it. I cover it when I think there are big, you know, breaks in this area. I don't know if you saw over this past weekend, but the Curiosity rover detected this big spike of methane, and now everyone is freaking out about it because methane often comes from biological sources here on Earth. But the problem with that is, you know, Curiosity can't really detect whether or not that methane is coming from any biology. So it's hard to know for sure. And the Curiosity rover has detected methane before. So I think we're very close to probably finding out that there might have been past life on Mars. I'm skeptical about whether or not it's there right now. Obviously, I think we should continue studying it. I think it's, you know, better odds than not. But right now seems tough, just because of the circumstances, and, you know, Mars is just not the most hospitable place. And if it does exist, at least in the forms that we know it, it'd have to be in these very specific conditions and maybe underground. And, you know, that's just not very conducive to life. But I think we are in the best position yet to discover it if it's out there.
Do you think if it was discovered, would it open up exploration and human spaceflight more to Mars? Would it maybe retard spaceflight to Mars for fear of contamination? What do you think the effect would be?
I think it would open it up, for sure. I don't think people would just sit on it. You know, let's say we found it, and then they'd say, okay, well, we shouldn't go back, you know, to contaminate it. I actually was speaking with Chris McKay. He's an astrobiologist, I believe.
Right at NASA Ames, uh-huh.
Yeah. He's a bit, you know, he's a big name in that area. And he was talking about his idea for terraforming Mars. You know, if we were to find life on Mars, then we should encourage that life to grow. And I really loved that idea, you know, rather than shy away from it and make it, you know, not touch it. Let's go and make this life thrive and grow. And I think that was just kind of a beautiful concept. You know, others probably would disagree with me.
And so they find present life on Mars and you still wouldn't go to report on it?
Look, I just want to guarantee that I'll come back. That's all.
There are no guarantees, especially in spaceflight. You know
exactly.
That. Exactly. So you may or may not. You may like it so much, and you may like the life that's on Mars that you may find a way to transform and stay.
Well, we were talking about work trips and shortening them. Once they figure out, a 2-month work trip to Mars, then I'll consider it. But for now, 2 years is a bit much.
Well, nuclear propulsion would help on that a lot. We didn't talk about that, but do you cover
another episode.
Do you cover advanced propulsion? Is it something you follow too?
Not. I wouldn't say as much as probably, you know, other reporters do, but I do think it is a fascinating topic, and I think this launch tomorrow is really interesting because it is testing out such, you know, different types of propulsion. I think I reported on the green propulsion that's going up tomorrow, and I think that's really fascinating. So yeah, it's definitely an area of interest, but not my biggest area of interest.
Any closing comments, anything you'd like us to hold on to or remember or have as a takeaway for tonight?
Takeaway. I think I just really love writing about space because I think it's such an aspirational topic. And I hope that, you know, it really makes me feel good to have readers write in and say that they enjoy my work or call in and say that they enjoy my work, because I hope that, you know, there's a lot of nasty stuff going on in the world right now, and I hope that I can provide some, you know, escape from that,
some,
you know, in a way.
Non-nasty space stuff, right.
I mean, not all space stuff is, you know, happy-go-lucky all the time. You know, there's a lot to criticize about what we're doing right now in space, and there's obviously, you know, a lot of coverage on that I do, but at the same time, you know, some of this stuff is really fascinating and really interesting, and that's what I really like about this topic. It's so multifaceted, and you can really go one way or the other. And I hope to keep reporting on it as long as my stress levels are low.
And we'll keep following you, and good luck with your cameras and reporting, and we'll look forward to your work coming up on the launch tomorrow. And
thank you so much,
and I hope to talk to you again down the road.
Yeah.
And thank you for an introduction to the aviation guys. And I will archive this and email it all to you tomorrow so you'll have the program and the details for it.
Lovely.
And good luck with your viewing the Falcon Heavy. And say hello to Celestis guys and gals if you see them. And tell them
I definitely will.
We love them on the space show. And I will talk to you again down the road. And it's good to meet you.
Yeah, it's good to meet you, too. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you. And listeners, that's it for tonight. And our next space show program is Tuesday evening. And our schedule is now up on the website. And we look forward to having you all tune in. Everybody have a great night. Good night from Lauren, David, and the space show. Keep looking up.